So last week, we spoke about attitudes and ways to relate to non-religious or non-observant, non-Orthodox Jews. And we covered a variety of aspects of that discussion. This week, I wanted to focus on one specific element that comes up in that context, although it is not unique to relating to non-observant Jews, but it certainly is part of that discussion. It's also important to note that the nuanced discussion that we had last week, and as it relates to this morning's idea, it's not exclusive to our community. You know, until now, we've been talking about different issues that identify and are special about our Masorah and what makes us unique in our Torah worldview. Not all of these are exclusive to our community. You will find many rabbinic figures and many Masorahs that have different pieces. And this issue that we're going to talk about today and what we talked about last week in terms of non-religious or non-observant Jews is also, it's not something that is exclusively ours, but I would say it's something that we emphasize. The ideas that we are talking about, it's not that we have a monopoly on them, but it's that these are central. They are things that define us in terms of our essence and what we emphasize. So we'll find them in other places, but these are certainly things that we emphasize. And I keep coming back. I would love to see if Wilkenstein wrote this somewhere, it would be great. But I keep coming back to these ideas of the concept of nuance and the relationship between Kodesh and Chol and the idea of human initiative as themes that keep coming up in all of these issues that reflect our community. So this is another example, today's discussion, and maybe we could call it the discussion. Thank you so much. I'm sorry you're schlepping.
That's all right.
We could call it the concept of competing values, which is that when we have a situation of black and white, Asur and Mutter, so then you don't really have tension. You either have what you must do or what you may not do, must not do. You know, it relates to the idea that we talked about in terms of a Dvar HaRishus and leisure and volition. So what happens, though, when you lead a life that is nuanced and that your Torah worldview is one which is not black and white, and it includes, let's say, the concept of human initiative, of Yeshuvu Shel Olam. So now that we have broadened the definition of our Torah life, we have created more opportunities for conflict, for tension, because it's not only one experience. It's not only one channel. It's not one focus. There are multiple aspects. And that makes it much more complicated. You know, if you have, you're all in one value. The Torah, which is obviously the central value, Talmud Torah specifically, if that's not just the central value, if that is the only value, so then you have less tension, you have less conflict, because it's all in. But when you broaden that, and you have a wider angle lens when you look at your Torah life on an integrated way, so now you have introduced a lot more values and a lot more factors, and so those become more complicated. And that's what we can think about today. I want to give you one specific Shaila, because it relates to what we spoke about last week. Now, this Shaila is just a point of departure, because in a certain sense, in a certain respect, this Shaila is nuanced, and it's also limited to the halachic context in which it was given, because it's pertinent to a specific halachic context. But it leads us to a fuller discussion of what we're talking about. There was a great Gaon and a tremendous tzaddik. He died not long ago, maybe 25 years ago. His name was Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, Zecher Tzaddik B'Kodesh Levracha. We've quoted him many times. So Shlomo Zalman it's difficult to describe Shlomo Zalman on one foot in one sentence. I would argue that Rav Lichtenstein has a short 4-page appreciation, which Rav Lichtenstein is 1 foot. You know, that's like one sentence, which is masterful, and I have a biography in Hebrew called HaTorah HaMesamachas. He was just an unusual person. And at that time, when he died, there were so many hundreds of thousands of people in his Levaya, which is not what shocked people. It was the fact that the kinds of people who were in his Levaya. And that meant Minakotza Elakotza Mamash. Literally from every stripe. So Shlomo Zalman has three volumes of responsa that he published, and it's complicated because they were published in different times. So one is just one version, that's one volume, a standalone volume. Then they published two and three, and then they republished them, rearranging them. But these are original tshuvas that he published. So we have the following shiloh, and this is in Siman Lamed Hey, and the title of this is Ha'aris Be'inyan Isser Lifnei Iver. Areas, issues that come up in the context of Lifnei Iver. Lifnei Iver means not facilitating someone else to violate an Iser. Exactly. So it's not just putting a physical brick in somebody's in front of somebody who's blind. It's also not just giving somebody bad advice. It's also, the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, facilitating someone else to violate one of the Isurim. So the Gemara gives an example. If you have a neighbor who's a Nazir, and he says, oh, I'm so thirsty. Do you have maybe an extra bottle of Chenin Blanc? I could really use a drink. And you give that person that bottle, so you're facilitating them violating their Naziris, because they're not allowed to drink wine. So he says, well, Baha, this is a very interesting introductory line. In this area, that a person needs to focus their goal, we need to aspire l'shem shamayim for the sake of heaven. Choshvani, I think. That's already a very interesting way to introduce a halachic responsum. It says choshvani. What happens? B'misha ba'ilav o'reach chashuv. A chashuva, fine guest, comes to you. Asher einenu shomer Torah mitzvahs. He's not observant. Aval adayin yesh lo ahava l'bnei Torah. He has a love and appreciation for religious people, for Torah students. Imagine this was a scenario, which Maisa Shaya Kachaya. There was a person who was involved in Kol Torah of Shlomo Zalman's yeshiva in Beit Vagan, who came to visit the yeshiva in the summertime, and it was very warm in the Beis Medrash. Well, you know, Shlomo Zalman quotes, there is a din in the Shulchan Aruch that you're not allowed to present a sandwich to someone who's not going to wash the tilas yadayim. You're not allowed to offer food to someone who's not going to make a bracha. And he says, even if you were to offer this to that person, give them the sandwich and say in a nice way, would you like to wash your hands? That's the custom here. If that goes, great. But what happens if you know that the person's not going to appreciate? That's not going to, it doesn't work. Zalo aleich. So Shlomo Zalman says, Choshvani, if you don't give that person a drink of water, that person who comes to Kol Torah in the summertime without air conditioning, he says, if that happens, he'll think that it's insulting. Someone comes to your house, comes to your yeshiva, it's 85 degrees in the Beis Medrash, there are a few fans, you don't offer him a cup of cold water. And it might be, it's likely he will distance himself, this person. He's going to say, what kind of people are these? And these people, they're so off. They're so socially inept. They're so callous. I don't want to have anything to do with them. I want to stay away from them. He says, Choshvani, I think. You should give that person a drink and something to eat. And not to follow what it says in the Shulchan Aruch about not giving food to somebody who's not going to make a bracha. That is the Choshvan.
Well, how about if a poor person who doesn't give money to the yeshiva, who is not Shomer Mitzvahs, who's not going to make a bracha, okay, and comes in and he's shvitz, that he looks terrible. Him you wouldn't give.
Well, it depends.
Well, you know.
If he's going to lose his respect for B'nai Torah, Avadi would give him.
Yeah, I mean, it, It's just interesting to pick that.
The context was, yes. Why did he write this tshuva the way that it was? Because it was a ma'aseh shehaya kachaya in the Beis Medrash. That was the case. He doesn't spell it out that way. But when he says Choshvani, everyone knows that it was the Bachrim who asked him. Because when this man came to the Beis Medrash, Rav Shlomo Zalman told one of the Bachrim to go get him a cup of water, a cold water. So the afterwards asked, "Hayitachein?
How can you do that?
How can you do that?" So Rav Shlomo Zalman explains. Now, this is going to be in Sograyim because it puts a significant limit on the Heter. He explains that the reason why he thinks this is Mutter, which is not really the direction I want to go, but just to explain it, he says, well, what is the prohibition that you're violating? The prohibition that you're violating is lifnei iver, causing someone to do an aveira. Well, what happens if you don't give him a drink? What are you going to cause him to do?
Sina.
That's right. So it's actually not a violation of the iser, which we're going to come back to. So it's actually, it's a prat in lifnei iver. It's not saying, oh, I'm going to eat a cheeseburger or put up a mezuzah. It's not two different mitzvahs. His chiddush is that within the din of lifnei iver, if you don't give him, it's a choice. You're either going to cause him not to make a bracha or hate observant people. That's the lumdus, which is why it would apply to a poor person also. If the poor person was a cabbie who dropped by the yeshiva and he said to one of the bachim, you know, I'm parched. Maybe do you have a cup of water? But this idea, which we're going to take, that he is the second part of the tshuva, which is even more, in a certain sense, a more of a chiddush, which we'll talk about in a little bit, this opens our eyes to an example of attention, where you have multiple factors at play. You have different considerations that we need to think about when we encounter these circumstances. They come up all the time, not just in the lifnei iver context. Sometimes there are categories that have no nuance, and then there are those that have. You know, certain cases, I'll give you an example. There's certain things that either you did it or you didn't do it. You have it or you don't have it. Tosfos says, in Maseches Nida, Tosfos gives an example. He says, let's say you have a mikvah. You have a mikvah that has 39 and a half saw. I don't remember how many gallons that is. And then you have another mikvah that has 40 saw. Tosfos says, in that case, one mikvah is acceptable, and the other mikvah is not acceptable. Let's say you have a mikvah with 41 saw, and then another mikvah with 100 saw. You could fit 10 guys in the mikvah at the same time. So it's very expedient, by the way. It's expedient. Sometimes that's important. Depends on the Friday. How much traffic.
Time is over the essence.
That's right. So Tosfos wants to know, is there a hiddur mitzvah to have a mikvah that has 100 saw versus a mikvah that has 41 saw? Tosfos says, no. Because he says, that's not a mitzvah, that's a matir. A matir means it's a status change. Either you are or you aren't. Either the mikvah is acceptable or it's not acceptable. So there's no hiddur. It either meets the criteria or it doesn't meet the criteria. So when it comes to a matir, there's no nuance. Right? Either an animal is shechted or it's not shechted. Now, today, because we have other shitos, different opinions, so you can have different levels. But be'ikaron, if we assume, there's a big debate, but we assume, let's say, shechita, slaughtering, that's a matir. It's either slaughtered or it's not slaughtered. You have lots of mishnayos like this in Menachos. How many species do you need for dalad minim? How many? Four. What if you have three? Do you get a partial mitzvah? No, because either you have it or you don't have it. It's not a lot of nuance there. You need seven branches in the menorah, the Gemara says. And those seven branches are ma'akva su'asu. If you have a six-branch menorah, it's very nice, but it's a zero. It's either yes or no. So those are categories. Those are categories that don't have nuance. There's no nuance there. But then there are other categories where even the Gemara starts to pick up on what to do when you have a conflict. So those categories, there's no conflict. Either you have it or you don't have it. In the other categories, let's say, I'll give a strange example, but it comes up in the Gemara in the beginning of Yevamos. Let's say the Besdin has to put somebody to death. It happened on occasion. And they had to put him to death through Sreifa. through burning hot lead and pouring it down the person's throat. It's not the most pleasant of activities. It's not what you're looking for. And it turns out that that person's supposed to be put to death on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, well, what do you do? Because on one hand, you have an Isser of doing malacha, of burning something on Shabbos. On the other hand, you have the din that you have to put this person to death. That's a conflict. You're looking at me like that's not pleasant. It's not. I'm not saying it's pleasant. But the Gemara says, well, we have a pasuk, lo sevaru eish b'chol mosh v'seichem b'yom ha-Shabbos. So one opinion in the Gemara is b'chol mosh v'seichem means, and even in Beis Din, you have a summons that you have to do this today, you can't do it on Shabbos. So then the Gemara introduces a whole discussion about conflicts. Well, one pasuk says that you're not allowed to wear shatnez, means you have any clothing that has wool and linen kind of fixed into it is prohibited. And yet, we know that if you have a garment that is either wool or linen, it requires, with four corners, to have minat Torah, requires tzitzis, and tzitzis has tcheles, and tcheles is comprised of what material is tcheles? That's right. So if you have a linen garment and you tie with a strong tie, you have to tie actual tie, the tcheles onto the garment, so now you have shanis. So I have competing values here. So the Gemara has a general principle that then becomes very nuanced, a lot of discussion. Esse docha lo sesse. What happens when you have a conflict? Ramban says, in his commentary on Chumash, he says, you know what the mitzvah of esse represents? It represents ahava. It represents love and the embrace of Hashem Yisbarach. And lo sesse, that represents limits. So for those who are familiar, Rabbi Pelkovitz, Zichron Levracha, and Dr. Pelkovitz, they have a Lahavdil Bein Chayim Bein Chayim, they have a book on parenting called Balanced Parenting, Love and Limits. That's why the Gemara says, Smol Doche, the left hand pushes away, and Yemin Mikarevis. In tradition, most people, take a survey, how many people have their arm, their stronger arm is their right arm? Right? Most people, I think, right? Most people are right-handed. So when the Gemara gives you the expression, Smol Doche Yemin Mekarevis, what's the Gemara trying to tell you?
With your hand stronger, so you bring it.
Right.
You bring,
yeah. We spend more energy and more investment bringing people closer, focusing on developing the love for our children, than we do with the limits. We have to have both. But which is stronger? The Ahava, Yemino Techabkeni. So the Ramban says, so to speak, he doesn't say it in this language, but the Ramban says, well, if you have to deal with the conflict between your yamin, the tzad of chesed, and the tzad of gevura, which is going to take precedence? That's right, the yamin. So, esse docha lo sesse, generally, yeah.
Going back to the original story about the person who wasn't going to say a bracha, if you should give them anything, right, to eat or drink.
Okay. I'll listen to the question, but I don't want to be derailed because it's going to come back later. Yeah.
So it's related kind of to what you just said. You mean in small. So why don't you say for sure you can have water and say the bracha with them? Say, how about
Okay, good. So let's get... So obviously, okay, ideally...
Do that. And then you actually are... 100%.
Yes. 100%. If you could do that, that would be awesome. But for a lot of people, you know... I know of people in this neighborhood, and some are in this room, who have business meetings. They have business gatherings. And they go to a restaurant, a chfeis, whatever, they're in a certain circumstance, and another colleague is there. And it would not be appropriate for this person in their station in the company to say to this other colleague, oh, I'm going to pass you the salad. Would you like to say a bracha with me now? You know, sometimes it works. Especially in my house, I'm a rabbi, so people expect they're going to get the rabbi, he's going to have like the whole look and the thing. And so the rabbi is going to say, make a bracha. For a lot of people, that's just not going to fly in the office. The person asks, you can bring me a cup of coffee. You know, you have someone who works in the front office, and then the CEO says, can you bring me a cup of coffee? You bring back the coffee, you say, I brought you a yarmulke. You know, one of those who used to grow up, we called them Saul Levinson yarmulkes. Saul Levinson is the funeral home in Baltimore. So they had those plastic yarmulkes. So whenever you had those yarmulkes, we called them Saul Levinson kippahs yarmulkes. You know, one of those plastic yarmulkes, you're going to give that to the CEO and say, I brought you a kippah for the cup of coffee. Sometimes it's hard to do. It's just awkward. It's hard to do that. So... of course, idealists. I want to get back to that in a second. But right now, we're putting out there that there are categories. before we get to the nuanced question that we're dealing with, there are some times where there's no cheshbonus. It's either kosher or it's not kosher. Either the mikveh has the water or it doesn't have the water. Then there are cases where you have esse dochelo sese, where you have to figure out what takes precedence over what. And the Gemara already gives you kolam. The Gemara says, well, what happens when you have an ase, there's so much love, but you have a lo sase that's very severe. A lo sase sheish bo karis. That's very serious. Or Rav Shechter Shlita likes to point out, based on this analysis, what happens if you have a conflict that comes up in the Beis HaMikdash? Well, you know that in the Beis HaMikdash, there's an added measure of yira. Mikdashi tiro. You can't spit in the Beis HaMikdash. You can't just hang out. You can't take off, you know, your jacket like a, you know, it's like a lounge. It's not like that. There's an added measure of yira. So there's a rule. The Gemara says, Ein esse docha lo sese sheba mikdash. If you're in the Beis HaMikdash, that loving feeling, that has to take a back seat to the reverence that's magia for this makom, for this place. So there are a lot of rules. The Gemara also has something called be'idna. They have to be simultaneous when you have that conflict. So these are categories that appear in the Gemara. Everybody agrees with them. Nobody disagrees. There's no shilas. There's no pikpukim. You have certain places where there's no compromise. It either exists or it doesn't. And then you have other areas where you have to navigate it. The question becomes, what happens when we have a nuance of competing values that don't fit into either of these categories? So I'll give you a great example. What happens if you're trying to facilitate an economy? You have to worry to make sure that everybody in the society has access to capital or access to basic liquidity. They need to get money from a bank. So you're worrying all about banks, and you're worrying to make sure everybody has money and they have access to money. But you notice that not because the people are mean, but for their own self-preservation, people start looking at their calendar and their watch when you come to ask for a business meeting if you're a banker. Why would somebody look at their calendar if you went to get for a loan from somebody? That's right. Because min haTorah, there's something called a hafka'ah. There is a removal of all loans on the seventh year. Shvius is mishametes. It's machlokas if it's at the beginning of the seventh year or at the end of the seventh year. We generally assume that it's at the end of the seventh year. I think Rav Avadya has a tshuva. But people in the fifth, sixth year, they look at their watch. They say, you know, I love you very much. I care about you. I want to invest in your business. I want to give you a hand. You know, it could be a major corporation who needs a loan to get, you know, a capital project. Or it could be a payday loan. Somebody, you know, they live paycheck to paycheck. Most payday loans are for people who, unfortunately, are in desperate need of a cash infusion right away, and they're very poor, and they oftentimes are exploited. So they need money. But they come to the person who has, and the person says, you know, it's 18 months out from Shemitah. I'm going to give you a loan, 5 years car payments. 5 years car payments, I'm never going to see the rest of that money. Ah, so what do? Prusbo. That's all he's thinking, like Hillel Hazake. Hillel comes up with the einfall of a prusbo. Why did Hillel enact a prusbo? Because he saw there's another mitzvah. The mitzvah of imkesef talva esami. Of lending your hand to be machzik people who are in a more difficult financial situation than you are. That's, of course, the Rambam says, the highest level of tzedakah, to give somebody a loan, to get their business going. It's much better than getting a handout. So what we're looking at is not a din of either the mikvah is kosher or not, and it's also not a din of esse docha lo sese. We're looking at two competing mitzvos. We have the mitzvah of imkesef tal ve'esami, and then we have the mitzvah of v'ashvias tishmiteno detashta, which is said about the ground. But so how do you navigate these mitzvahs? So Hillel says, look, I'm not compromising mitzvahs. I'm not a guy who's making a concession. I'm actually prioritizing mitzvahs. Because you could say, Hillel, you're such a minimalist. You just look for loopholes, right? If you were to explain the concept of Prusbul to somebody, which of course is the precursor to the heter that is called the heter hiska that allows banks to loan money, especially in Israel. I think I don't know if it's a law in Israel. I should find out. Is it a law or it's just a practice? Every bank, they have a standard heter hiska. After heter hiska, what comes later in Europe? Mechiras chametz. Then America, Mechiras Chametz become much more. These are all from the same thing. So someone would say to Hillel, you're just always looking for shortcuts. Hillel would say, I'm not looking for shortcuts. It depends how you look at it. If you look at it in a very narrow lens, yes, it's a shortcut. You have just shortcutted the mitzvah of Hashmat HaSkesafim. But if you look at it at a wider lens, you have actually enhanced mitzvahs. Because you have enhanced the mitzvah of Imkesef Tal Vesami.
He couldn't do that without it having a basis. It's
yes.
Because it's a mitzvah d'oraisa.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's hefker based hefker.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can't, so these are, exactly. It's not like you could just make it up on your own and say, well, I'm going to prioritize one over the other. I'm just going to make it up. There are a lot of limitations. Oh, I'll give you another example. That is also important, that teaches us something in terms of the takeaway. The Gemara has in Bava Metzia, when you talk about esse dokolos esse, lo dachinan isure mekame mamona. Let's say you have a Kohen who's walking past the cemetery and he sees somebody's aveda in the cemetery. So that person's aveda, it's worth a few $100. They left their suitcase or their wallet. So the Gemara says, the Kohen can't go into the Beis HaKavaros. The Kohen can't go into the cemetery. Your wallet is sitting there for $200. So the Gemara has a couple of limitations. One of those is lo dachinan isura, the iser for the Kohen, the spiritual pitfall of walking into the cemetery. Lo dachinan mikame mamona. He's got $200 on the line. Okay, so it's $200. It's far fallen. Because, when you talk about prioritizing and navigating, so you can't, like Jeff was saying, you can't break the rules. And this is not a compromise. It's saying, let's figure out, when we have multiple values on the table at the same time, how do we negotiate them? And that is, I think, this idea of nuance. When you introduce more than one value, and if in our community we do introduce more than one value, now you have more complicated questions. So you have the prioritization of Talmud Torah, but you also have Yeshuva Shalolam. And I'll give you another example. Several years ago, in the Kollel, we were learning sections of Evan HaEzer and Yoredeya that were pertinent to fertility issues in Halacha. Hilchos Nida and Hilchos Mikvos, Evan HaEzer, Pru Revu, these different questions. So we came across a tshuva. This tshuva appears in the Shaul and Tshuvas Minchas Yitzchak from a great Meshiv, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a great Gaon. And the question was, it was a difficult question, and I don't want to disparage in any way. I want to make clear we're not criticizing or denigrating or disrespecting this tshuva. I'll share with you what the shaila was, what the answer was. And then I took this question to Rav Schechter, and Rav Schechter was unequivocally opposed to this psak. The shaila was, it was a Pru Revu question about contraception. For a family that had five children, now it was not clear from the shaila, at least to me, whether they had five, their children were all boys, and therefore they had not yet fulfilled the mitzvah Pru Revu, according to Beis Hillel, that's one boy and one girl, or they had boys and girls, and it was just a question of fulfilling the added mitzvah of Sheves and La'erev al Tanach Yadecha, of having more children, which is, larger families is a blessing for the Jewish community, and that's part of the Torah's value system. So the shaila was, this family wrote to the Minchas Yitzchak that they have five children, and the fifth child has disabilities. It sounded like they have emotional disabilities and other, a child's special needs. So the shaila was whether or not this couple was permitted to employ contraception because they want to take care of their children. And the Minchas Yitzchak's answer was no. So I was pretty astonished by that psak. So I took that psak to Rav Schechter. I asked him what he thought. And he thought absolutely not. He thought it was wrong. Now, there are different aspects of that psak which are specific to that circumstance. But part of what, to me, was underlying that psak is every posik has to make a shikal hadas on various values. So if you look at a question like that in a very narrow, limited view, so you're only looking at one value, the value of puruvu, and the Gemara says that puruvu is a mitzvah rabbah. It is such a great, important mitzvah. It's of the highest regard, puruvu. Now, you know, some people have that mitzvah if they get married and have children. Others have that mitzvah, the Gemara, the Shekhar likes to tell that in Europe, that people would give donations either to yeshivas or to orphanages, or they would adopt, whatever it is. You know, that mitzvah is fulfilled in different ways to the best of every person's ability. But if you look at that shaila in a very thin slice, so you can understand that psak. Puruvu is a major mitzvah rabbah, the Gemara says it, and only says that about two mitzvahs, about pidyon shvuyim, rescuing somebody who's been captured by marauders, and puruvu, to my knowledge. Maybe there are others, but in the context of Bava Basra, those two mitzvahs, that's huge. So you could say, that's it. But if you widen the scope and you say, well, there are other potential mitzvos or halachic or even meta-halachic considerations, maybe those that get to more to the yeshuva shel olam side of the consideration. Not just talking about, by the way, not just talking about the health of the mother and not just talking about the chole hanefesh of the mother, which Rav Moshe talks about in his tshuvas, that if the mother is what Rav Moshe talks about, nervin, you know, people who have, they must speak, they can't handle anymore, must speak. They have X number of children, that's it. They can't handle anymore. But it's not just that. It's that maybe there are other cheshbonos that go into the discussion. So if you look at things with a more nuanced and broad view from a halachic standpoint, which again, is not exclusive to our community, chas v'shalom, nobody should misunderstand me, but that's something that is essential to our community. So then Rav Schechter thought that that psak was totally not appropriate, and that the mitzvah of chinuch, of how to take care of the other children, especially a child with special needs, that's going to trump, or it's going to balance out, or mitigate, it's going to mitigate the, well, it depends.
I just say,
all right. Yes. Oh, now we're getting railroaded here. Yes, Paul, we'll start with Ben and Dennis, yeah.
So, the question isn't so much, can there be flexibility in psak, as it seems.
Right.
It's more, where do you draw the line?
Well, the question is not
on that slippery slope. So where
it's a question of what values are you looking at when you make this psak? What values are you including in your cheshbon? If somebody were to say, can I go to an amusement park, or is that bittul Torah? So the posek is going to have to weigh different values. If the only value that is of consequence to you is Talmud Torah, then you're going to be very hard-pressed to permit time devoted for going to an amusement park. It comes back to our discussion about leisure. But if in your context of values you include Yeshuva Shalolam or other types of values that are not as important to Talmud Torah, to be clear, they're not as important, but they are also important, so then you have to ask the question, well, why would you be going? So maybe it's for vacation to facilitate your Talmud Torah, or maybe it's because you need to be kind of the mitzvah of chinuch and you need to spend time with the child. Or maybe it's because you're whatever. You know, thinking about it in a more broad way may arrive at a different conclusion. And it's not so much that you are compromising one area, it's that you are actually emphasizing a different area. And that's what we learn from Hillel. One second, we're going to get to Dennis first. You can look at cheshbonos that poskim or communities make, and you could say, oh, they just cut corners. They just cut compromise. They just compromise, and they look for every kula. That's one way to look at it. But that's not always the way to look at it. In many cases, it depends on the values that you're dealing with. So a kula in one area could actually be a chumra in a different area. I'll give you one example, then we'll get to Dennis. Pikuach nefesh on Shabbos. It is known that Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the grandfather of the late Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Brisker was known to be an insanely ridiculous makel when it came to pikuach nefesh questions on Shabbos. Everybody knew, if you wanted a leniency, you go to Reb Chaim. So somebody once asked him, and Reb Chaim, the Soloveitchiks, the Briskers, are not known for chasing leniencies. Do you know what I'm saying? That's not their bumper sticker. So someone once asked Reb Chaim, out of respect, like, everybody says you're the craziest makel when it comes to pikuach nefesh. Reb Chaim says, I'm not a makel, I'm a machmir. I'm machmir about everything. They said for the Brisker Rav, he had five kulas. One of his kulas was learning more on Erev Tisha B'Av. You know, that was his kula. What am I? I'm a machmir because I'm machmir on pikuach nefesh. You're right. It's a kula. It's a quote-unquote compromise on the mitzvah of Shabbos. But it's a emphasis. It's a chumrah in the area of pikuach nefesh, of the mitzvah of chai b'hem. It's like a prusbul. So if we make our cheshbonos as a community and as individuals based on what's going to bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not what's easier, but what is more ruchnius, so that, because it involves competing values, that could result in a different conclusion than somebody else, but not for a dearth of religiosity. It's not because we're trying to cut out or take a shortcut on our Yiddishkeit. It's adrabba. It's because of our Yiddishkeit, because of the halachic and meta-halachic values of our Masorah, that we arrive at a different conclusion. So if you are super machmir about pikuach nefesh, so that's going to come at the expense of Chilul Shabbos. The same thing cuts both ways when it comes to questions in Hilchos Nida. So family purity questions oftentimes cut both ways. Sometimes somebody who's very stringent about family purity questions ends up shortcutting the mitzvah pru revu or ona, of time that a couple can be together. So a chumrah in one area may be a kula cutting somebody out on a different area. And a chumrah in pru revu may result in a kula in a different area. It's not because we're looking to shortcut. It's adrava. It's because we're looking to follow what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants from us, and we're trying to navigate the competing values. That's what we're doing all the time. Yes, Dennis.
Leading into talking about Shabbat, go back to the lead and Shabbat. What was the end of it? Did you get to the end of that?
You're putting somebody to death.
When you're putting someone to death.
Yeah. So the Gemara says that's a Beferish Gemara that ain't. It's not Docha Shabbos.
Oh, it's not.
It's not Docha Shabbos.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got competing values that we have to deal with nuances. But let's say you've got the same Posek, the same Shiloh, the same competing values, but two or three different people come in with those things. Do you look at their personal situation?
So that of course is true, but that's true in every community. In every community, any bona fide Posek, any Posek of serious gravitas always takes into account the shoel, the person who they're asking. That's universal. What we're pointing out today is that the way that these issues are going to be resolved actually depends ultimately on these deeper questions of, do you look at things in a narrow lens or in a broad lens? Is it black and white or is it nuanced? Is it only one value or are there multiple values? Yeah.
And a question regarding the Mechaskinok, he said they couldn't do Puruvu, and they had to do Puruvu, but he must have known all these factors. What was his rationale? Just, you have to do it, or like, did he go?
So going back to the Minchas Yitzchak, so the Minchas Yitzchak is going to say that since the mitzvah of Puruvu is a mitzvah Rabbah, so that's going to outweigh all these other factors.
Regardless of what they are.
That's exactly what he's saying. And what we're saying is that, well, different poskim, Rav Schachter assumes that these factors are not going to be outweighed by the mitzvah of Puruvu.
Right.
And that, again, it's a local machlokas about a local question, but I think it's part of a way of looking at things. It's part of a perspective of, is it narrow or is it broad?
But his answer was a blanket answer for everyone, basically. Or just his one case?
No, it's still only one case, and this gets to your point. I'm just using these, the question of Rav Shlomo Zalman and the question of the Minchas Yitzchak as examples. And they are particular examples that are particular to a specific mitzvah and a specific circumstance. It could be the Minchas Yitzchak would have answered differently. But to me, they raise this issue. And now we get to the second part of Rav Shlomo Zalman's tshuva. So here also, in every community you have different posts, and we view this differently. Rav Shlomo Zalman wonders about now the following case. And here is where, now we kind of see, we talked about, you know, black and white, it's either mikveh is it or it isn't. We talked about esse dokolos esse. Now we talked about competing values. Well, what about this specific case? What happens if you have a case where you see somebody, Shlomo Zalman says, someone sees their friend, their fellow, drinking a cup of wine from Orla grapes. Orla is a restriction against fruit that is grown within the first 3 years since it's planted. There's an Isser Hana, it's completely forbidden even to derive any benefit. And Shlomo Zalman says, you can't convince, you guys are going out for a drink, and he says, oh, this is mamish, the best, I'm not giving it up. Right? This is the guy from last week, the non-observant guy who can't, okay, he's going to drink his Orla wine. So what happens if he steps out for a second, he runs to the bathroom? Shlomo Zalman says, let's say, and theoretically, you could pull a switcheroo, and you would give him not kosher wine. He's going to detect the kosher wine right away. You can give him wine that's tevel. Tevel means the grapes had not been fixed by removing the truma and the meiser, which is a lower level, or stam yenum. You say, you know, it's better off that this guy drinks the stam yenum, the non-kosher wine, than it is for him to drink wine of Orla. What would you say? Should you do it or not? So some poskim would say, what are you mishing arayin? What are you getting involved? If you give him the cup of stam yenam, now you are responsible. Shouldn't get involved. But several years ago, I asked Rav Schwartz this question in different language. When I was talking to somebody who had a difficult medical circumstance in their family, and this person, Lamaisa, they were not at the level that they were going to walk to the hospital on Shabbos, even though for them and the person who was in the hospital, it was not a situation of pikuach nefesh. So there was not, I can't say I know everything that was going on over there, but having been connected to them, it was not a case that was justified for the person to drive on Shabbos. It was not. But they, whatever, they were, that was their choice. So I asked Rav Schwartz, I said, well, I know this person is planning to drive on Shabbos. Is it better for me to just sit quietly? I'm not getting involved. It's not my issue. They're going to drive on Shabbos. That's their choice to drive on Shabbos. Or should I recommend to them that they call a taxi? So in the second option, I am responsible for advising them to be mechal Shabbos when it's not justified to go to the hospital to visit this person. What would you say? So Rav Schwartz said he thinks that it's preferable to advise them to take a cab. Because you're not violating Lifnei Iver, you're not tripping them up. What are you doing? You're doing a chesed. Rav Shlomo Zalman says it's better for you to give that person the cup of non-kosher wine, even though you're feeding the person non-kosher stam yenam, because you're helping them. So what you have is, you have a situation that you can't control. And if you look at it in a narrow lens, my action, if someone were to walk in the room and they see me sitting at a bar with somebody, me ordering non-kosher wine, putting it down in front of them, they sit down, they're Jewish. Everyone knows they're Jewish. And they drink that cup of wine. What would they say? They said, I'm violating Lifnei Iver. I'm serving this person non-kosher wine. That's what they would see if they looked at it in a narrow lens. But Rav Shlomo Zalman says, well, if you look at it in a broader lens, I'm not being machshel that person. I'm helping that person. Because they were going to order the bottle of, they brought in their own. They brought their own bottle of wine of Orla. But I paid for their wine. I paid for it. Shlomo Zalman says, I'm doing them a chesed. He says, even though you're not allowed to do an Avera, Let's say there's something that's tevel. I'm not allowed to do an avera to be mafresh tevel so that you can eat kosher food on Shabbos, because that's my avera, and this is your mitzvah, your chiyuv. But in this case, it's more nuanced than that. They're both kind of lifnei iver type of issues. So he says, you are matzil bekach es ha'ochlim. You are saving in that person, in that case. So, yeah.
But in the case of the wine,
yeah.
When you say you're doing the switch, he's not aware that you did the switch. So he's still maybe thinking that he's drinking the Orla wine. In the case of taking a cab or driving, you're giving the person the choice. So they are making the decision.
Right. So I kind of exaggerated that case, but it would be true even if they had the choice. I'm just exaggerating it. Okay. But in Achanami, the person sat down and they said, oh, I'm going to order the Orla wine. And I say, no, don't worry. I already ordered a bottle of non-kosher wine for us. I paid for it already. And they can have the choice. They can still say, well, you keep the non-kosher wine. I'm going to drink my Orla wine. But it doesn't really, it doesn't make a difference. I just kind of dramatized it.
Okay.
But in a Hanami, now, Rosh Hashanah says, the Gemara says, you can't. You're not allowed to be misaking tevel for somebody else. But in this case, you're just helping that person. You're not doing your own isser. You're actually doing a maisa hatzala. But why does Rosh Hashanah say that? It's because he has a wider lens. So that wider lens, I think, is what we're talking about in terms of our issue.
It's also, that, I mean, just if you think about, you know, up there, mitzvahs, you know, and averus. Better for the world to have more mitzvahs, less averus, less serious averus. Oh. So just forgetting about that person for a second, just in terms of the cheshbon in Shemayim,
oh.
It would be better. Also.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. But the interesting thing is that the halacha doesn't take that approach. Because the halacha worries about me. So let's say, for example, you had tevel that was not taken yet before Shabbos, and I could fix it by taking truma on Shabbos. But that's an issur d'rabbanan. I'm not allowed to do that. Even though klapei shmaya, the aggregate would be better, but I'm not allowed to sacrifice my spiritual stature for you. So it's kind of a limited perspective. But the point is that I'm thinking that as we're kind of coming to the end of our whole journey here, and when we think about these values, the values of nuance and yeshuv v'shal olam and the concept of balancing kodesh and chol, it actually is going to have an impact halacha l'maisa. But that, and especially when we talk about how to relate to non-observant people, the whole discussion. But that is not, and this is what I think is the most important takeaway, that is not because of an absence of Yiras Shamayim. It is actually a consequence of Yiras Shamayim. It's the consequence of embracing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all of the different areas that leads us to these conflicts, to these questions of how to navigate them. And the psakim that we receive from our poskim are going to be ones that require, you could even argue, a heightened sense of Yiras Shamayim. You know, it's in a certain sense, it's easier to give a psak on a black and white question. You don't have to. The Gemara has a phrase, koach de hetera odif. It doesn't take a chacham to aser something. Everybody can make something aser. Right? Anybody could say it's black and white, and if it's black and white, it's not so complicated. You know, poskim for generations didn't schwitz overnight over black and white questions. They schwitzed overnight over aguna questions where it was not so simple, or Shabbos questions, or all these. So the point is that we need to remember that when we individually and communally balance these factors that come to us through our Masorah, when we make a decision, even though that decision may differ from a different community, it should not be coming from a place of complacency or somehow mediocrity or a lackadaisical level of commitment. It's coming from, if you look at Rav Lichtenstein, all of his writings, anything that I've ever written, it's coming from a heightened sense of Yiras Shamayim. It's coming from a heightened sense of commitment. And that commitment is a broad one. It's a nuanced one. And because of that, we're going to come to a different conclusion. But it's out of a sense of coming closer, not a tepid commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's something that we need to constantly be evaluating for ourselves and for our community. Thank you for coming. Hope you have a great week.
When is Ratner, next week or the week after?
What's that?
Ratner, next week or the week after?
The